Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. I'm Steve Benson, that's Paul Schultz, and nothing you're about to hear is true. Christmas tree up.
Yep.
Yes. Hold on. I'll show you. It's in the corner there.
Oh, yes. There it is.
My little 4 foot tall Christmas tree. It looks so small.
That looks like a Festivus. It's a Festivus pole.
You know, last year we did Christmas at my parents' house, and they've got some nice high ceilings. You know, so we went out and we got a huge artificial tree. We decided to do Christmas over there. Did a whole big thing. You know, I mean, it was like a Charlie Brown thing minus the depression. And the tree was enormous. Now, for the past 5 years, this tree was fine. But I put it up. And thinking back to last year, I'm like, yeah. And plus, you know, the... When I got it, the kids were smaller, so it looked bigger. So, yeah, it's a Festivus pole.
It's like when your neighbor mows his grass. Suddenly, your grass looks taller.
Yeah, I mean my parents' tree was as tall as I am. This thing's like a little 4 footer, and I got it on a 2 foot stand, and it somehow is still shorter than me. So,
I would be remiss. And I think I owe it to our listeners to point something out, because if I were me, I'd be screaming it at the radio right now. Let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
So you had Christmas at your folks.
Last year, yes.
Right. Your dad is a successful businessman, is he not?
Yes.
And what line of business is he in?
I know where this is going.
As a reminder for our listeners, I mean, I know you know, and I know you know I know, but you know, we might have some new listeners this week. What line of work is that? What does his company do?
He buys and sells and services chainsaws.
Oh, and chainsaws for cutting, presumably trees, right? Like
yes,
in the forest.
Yes,
and. And so you had Christmas at your folks, and what sort of tree did you have?
It was an artificial tree.
An artificial tree. Did you go to an artificial forest with an artificial chainsaw and artificially cut down an artificial tree and bring it back? Was it like the Lorax?
It's a well-known fact that my family has had no luck with real trees. The trees that my mother would pick out and we'd cut down and bring into the house were like the saddest excuse for trees ever. And at one point we just decided, you know, enough was enough, because she would never bring home a good tree. You know, because we sent her out into the forest to cut down the tree.
Well, if your brother Bud were here, I have a feeling I know what he'd be saying right now. He'd be saying, look, my dad doesn't sell chainsaws to cut down trees that you set up in your living room and, you know, decorate with pretty colors and things and put a star on the top. My dad sells chainsaws that you cut down, cut into pieces, and throw them into a stove to burn. Okay?
Yeah.
So you could forgive us if we don't have that kind of chainsaw business where you go cut down pretty trees and put them in your living room. Only he would say it with a vaguely Southern accent, even though he's from, you know, Northern Indiana.
Vague? You keep using this word.
And then he would sing a song about it.
That's right. The other reason is I despise the little pokey green things clogging up my vacuum cleaner.
Because they remind you of bobby pins?
Yes. That's what you call a callback. No, I hate the way I hate the way real trees shed. Plus, I think it's just a waste.
So when you guys would get these sad Christmas trees that your mom went to the forest and cut down, did you burn them when at the end of the Christmas season? Did you cut them up and throw them in the stove?
No, you can't do that with pine. It's a fire hazard.
But, it'll gunk up your damn chimney with the pine sap or whatever. Right?
Yes, it will. As dumb as that statement sounds, yes, that's exactly what would happen.
Nothing starts a fire better than pine needles.
Mm-hmm.
You got that flammable, whatever that is in there, pine saw stuff.
That's where they get it.
Change the channel, Marge.
All right. Well, you know, we have an artificial tree as well, which is... when I was a kid, we always had a real tree.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like Norman Rockwell. We'd go out, like if Norman Rockwell were from rural Alabama and moved north like to pick fruit, but the truck broke down in Michigan City.
That's right.
And if Norman Rockwell worked in a foundry as a welder and, went out drinking every night, except during Christmas when we'd go out and cut down a tree. Anyway, by hand, we'd bring the bow saw because yes, they did have saws that you could borrow or maybe rent.
Mm.
I suppose rent. Otherwise, why would we bring our own bow saw? They probably charge extra to like use theirs. But anyway, we go find a tree, we cut that thing down ourselves, and then, you know, trim it up and everything, and bring it home. Try to shake as many of those needles off as we could. We knew it was fresh because we had just cut it down ourselves. I remember the first time, my wife and I get married, and our first few Christmases, it's like, what are we doing? We're not getting a tree, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not even going to be here, right? We're going to be off visiting family or whatever. The first year we decided to get a tree, she's like, let's go buy a tree from the department store or whatever. I'm like, you don't buy trees at the department store. What are you talking about? She's like, no, you know, we got to get our tree. You know, it's like, we're going to get a real tree. She's like, all right, we were in Chicago by this time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like Norman Rockwell. No, it was a lot less Norman Rockwell and a lot more, Ralphie from Christmas Story.
That, yes.
Because there was nowhere to go cut down a tree, right?
Yeah.
So we had to go to some parking lot somewhere and pick out a tree that had been cut God knows when,
mm-hmm.
and shipped to Chicago, right? We get it home and we get it all set up in our apartment, third floor apartment, get it all set up, and it's like really a sad... I mean, it's like we thought it was good in the parking lot, mm-hmm. and then we get it home. Doesn't look that great. And, you know, we're decorating or whatever. We sit down. We're drinking our eggnog or whatever. And there's a bee in the house. We're like, it's the middle of winter. How is there a bee in here? And then there's another bee and another bee. Constance goes and looks in the tree. She's like, there's a beehive in this tree. And she goes running the other way.
You woke it up, like, bringing it into the warm house.
Yeah, exactly.
They're confused.
So now, it's a confused bee. He's like, what, is it April already? Like, it feels like I just went to sleep. He's like, no, you just woke up because you have to go pee. All right. Go pee and go back to bed, bee.
That's right. Santa's coming. You got to get back to bed.
Yeah. So we took it out on the back deck. We called, I don't know who we called. I don't know what we did, honestly. But somehow we got rid of the bee's nest and brought it back in. I don't know if it was that same year or a different year. But we were vigilant about the water in the tree stand,
mm-hmm.
with the real tree.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you cut a tree down in, you know, May in Wisconsin and you ship it to Chicago to be sold in December, I don't care how well you keep it watered. Mm. So this is when we had rabbits in our apartment in Chicago, and the bunny would go over there to the tree and he'd be like, oh, look, it's like to us, it would be like this giant like just a what? Like a giant chicken on a stick, right? You'd be like, oh, look, chicken on a stick. I'm going to eat that. And he just, like, you'd see the bunny over there just, like, up on its hind legs going. And then you would just, it would be, like, raining. Like, it would cause the tree to shake a little. And the needles would just rain down on top of him. He'd hop away, like, covered in needles. Like, should they be falling off like that? I mean, we are keeping it watered, right? Yeah, we're keeping it watered. Huh. By the time Christmas rolled around, there were like 14 needles left on this Christmas tree. And that's it. It was like totally bare, just, you know, twigs. So that was that year. And then how many years in am I? That's two, right? Okay, so on the third year, look, I only have to cover about 25 years, so
it won't take too long.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was a few years of experience with the tree. We finally, about 10 years ago, got the artificial tree.
Yeah. Yes. All of those stories basically point to why I have this sad Festivus pole in my corner.
Right.
I recently found out, though, that not all of the trees that we had growing up were came out of the woods. My one of my older brothers used to go steal them from this tree guy and bring them over to us and tell. And it's like, we found this out years later. And it's like, really? So we were like Whoville around this tree that was this ill-gotten tree on Christmas morning. So that's Christmas in Indiana, folks.
Hey, are the Who's from The Grinch? Are those the same Who's as the Horton Hears a Who?
I would assume so, which doesn't make The Grinch very imposing when you think about it, because he's small enough to fit on a dust speck.
Yeah. Well, they don't look a lot like the same Who's. In fact, there's a Who in Horton Hears a Who that looks like a brown version of the Grinch.
Mm-hmm.
And Horton Hears a Who, by the way, was written before How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Huh. Oh, there's something there. Somebody go look it up. Superfan James, go look that up and get back to us. All right. Gave him an assignment. He is our tech correspondent, and that's looking right. Stuff up these days is all about the technology.
That's right.
What a top.
The other thing that I wanted to complain about is, and I'm about disgusted with this. All right, my childhood. Well,
are we having the grumpy old men yells at cloud episode?
Yeah, this is the Don't Panic Radio Show Christmas, grumpy Christmas edition.
You know that's what we'll call it.
So, you know, A Christmas Story came out sometime in the 80s, right? Late 80s?
Yeah.
Right?
Early 80s. Like early, yeah, 80s. Probably 84. I'm going to say 84.
So you got the leg lamp, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I first saw the leg lamp for sale, I was like, oh, leg lamp. I'm going to buy the leg lamp. It's for sale, you know? And
yeah.
How cool is that? Next thing you know, every freaking body, I have two leg lamps. Because I bought one and somebody got me one for Christmas. And my brother Mike, you know, that one, it was awesome because he got a crate from work and painted like stenciled Fragile on it, like fragile.
Right.
And he brought it in my parents' house and like set it down. And so I'm like, of course, playing the part. I'm like, oh, there could be anything in there. And like there were, he actually put a bunch of like crap in there that I, you know, like fibrous material that I had to take out of there. And there's this leg lamp in there. And that was cool. What was also cool is there was a bottle of Knob Creek and two whiskey glasses in there. They didn't show that in Christmas Story, even though, you know, old man was drunk the whole time.
I think maybe the Knob Creek was the actual Christmas present.
I think the experience was the present, because he knew.
Oh, okay.
It was a shared love for that movie.
Yes.
So he knew bringing that crate in.
Yeah.
That old man was drunk that whole movie.
Yeah.
I love the scene on Christmas morning. He's just like,
Yeah. Because how many of us dads have sat there in our chairs Christmas morning? you know.
Yep. That's why I started having Bloody Marys ready. It's red. It's got celery's green. It's red and green. It's a Christmas drink.
That's it. Put like a candy cane in there and you're good to go. I think more people own leg lamps than have actually seen that movie. I think owning a leg lamp is like saying you're afraid of clowns now. It's just...
Oh, it jumped the shark.
Yeah.
No, I'll tell you what, man. Tonight, I took my daughter to CVS because she has a Secret Santa thing going at school. Huh? She needed to pick up a gift. And while she was looking for something over in the makeup aisle, because she's 12, going on 22, I took my other daughter to the toy section because I was like, come on, let's go look at the toys. And so we're looking at toys, and I look up, and for 14 milliseconds, I was excited to see this thing. And then I was immediately dejected and wanted Christmas to go away immediately. And it was... It was a replica similar to the leg lamp, right? Same size, same sort of deal. It was the Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
Oh, yeah.
At CVS.
Yeah.
All right. Not at some like out of the way, gimmicky, like Christmassy store.
Yeah.
Not like out of the way at a Christmas market. Not like something you have to find on the internet that somebody made by hand. It was a mass-produced, probably from China. I mean, China. Replica in a box. And, like, for 14 milliseconds, I was like, oh, my God, I got to have that. And I was like, there are a couple of dozen of them on that shelf.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in everybody's house, and everybody's going to think, look what I thought of. And, Mike, if you're listening and you got me that for Christmas, I will love to have it. That's fine. Go ahead and give it to me.
Just don't forget the Knob Creek.
It'll be great. I'll love it. Just don't forget the Knob Creek. Thank you. Whoo, took me 18 minutes to get there, but finally got there.
Yeah, you know what's so funny about... I remember when... What's so funny about the Christmas Story is I saw it like in July. Because you and I were doing something one day, and you're like, have you ever seen A Christmas Story? And I'm like, yeah, with Scrooge and all that. And you're just like, no, man, A Christmas Story with the kid. I'm like, what are you talking about? So, you know, that was the extent of that conversation. And then, like, about a week later, my phone rings, and you're like, hey, man, because you had the big old satellite. You're like, hey, man, Christmas Story is about to come on. Come on down. So I came running down in the rain. And sat there and laughed my ass off. And now it's just...
Why are they playing it in July?
I don't know, but it was so... That was a game changer, man. That movie is... It may very well be the best Christmas movie ever, honestly. Or no, it's the most honest Christmas movie ever.
Yeah. How they captured everything about our childhood, even though they were in town and we were in the country, they still got the drabness of it right. They got the bully part right.
And that was in the 50s, early 50s, I assume. And here we
40s.
Okay.
Which is weird.
And then here we are.
Because it didn't seem like the 40s. You know?
Yeah, it seemed like contemporary to us. Mm-hmm. Because we lived out in the country. That's why.
That seemed like my childhood. The boots they wore to school, those freaking snow boots that you could never get on over your shoes, the snow suits, the everything.
Only our neighborhood was loaded with Scott Farkases. It wasn't just one.
Yes.
There was about six Scott Farkases.
His eyes were yellow.
So help me God, he had yellow eyes.
It is weird, though, now that you bring it up, and I'm sure I've thought this many times along the way, but it doesn't come to mind immediately until I'm reminded of it. That was set in the 40s, the late 40s.
Yeah, it was after World War II, yeah.
And it reminds me of my childhood more than any other Christmas movie.
That's
And I look at it and everything looks like my childhood. Everybody's acting like my childhood. And we grew up in the 70s and 80s.
That's because our parents were baby boomers. And that's the way they had it.
We were in a time warp.
And that's what they emulated what they did.
The appliances in the kitchen. the furniture.
Yep.
The desks at the school.
Yep.
The playground. The equipment on the playground. Everything was exactly like it was when we grew up in the 70s and 80s. Like, on our Facebook group, the description talks about how we are the godfathers of Generation X,
mm-hmm.
and how we are the original 80s, children of the 80s. And since the 80s are popular, come check it out, right? And now I'm thinking, maybe we're not. we're like, people are listening to us going, I don't think that was the 80s. I think that was the early 50s, maybe. Maybe 60s.
Well, you know, when you grow up heating your house with wood and eating things like, you know, stewed cabbage, it's easy to get confused.
And squirrel.
Yeah, and squirrel. It's easy to get confused that, you know, we didn't just beat the Kaiser.
We didn't just beat the Kaiser. Hey, big night tonight. We're having pigs in a blanket. Oh, pork. I like pork. No. Pigs in a blanket is cabbage wrapped around cabbage. Oh, that sounds good. So which one is the pig and which one's the blanket? Well, the cabbage is the pig and the cabbage is the blanket. Oh, that sounds good. Don't worry. We're going to spice it up. Salt and pepper.
That's right.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Speaking of the 80s, I do know that we grew up in the 80s for a couple of reasons. Even though it seems like we may have grown up in the late 40s, early 50s. But there are a couple of reasons I know we grew up in the 80s. One is, I remember thinking during the 80s, I was like, you know, people love the 60s, the 70s, the classic rock stations playing all the 70s, late 60s music. And people are wearing bell bottoms and stuff because it's like nostalgic. I said, and then people are like, oh yeah, you know, the 50s, they did that. You know, the 50s came back in fashion and stuff. So, you know, a decade's never going to come back. This one, the one we're in right now, the 80s, never going to come back, right? Because the music sucks. The hairstyles suck. The clothes suck. Everybody sucks. People suck in general. Mm-hmm. Never coming back. Here we are. It took a long freaking time, right? Because the 80s, like, people might be going, oh, wasn't there a phase earlier in, you know, when the 80s came back? No. It took until 2017 for the 80s to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Except,
we almost missed it, thank God. But, oh, unfortunately.
We almost missed it. We almost. Hey, if it could have held out a little longer, we would have been dead before it came back.
It's like that. It's like when you almost have the hiccups, but you like freeze up and try to stop it from happening. We were like that close to skirting the 80s.
So I'm famous for, and by famous, I mean there are three or four people who are sick of hearing me say it, for saying that the music in the 80s was horrible. In fact, on the way to school this morning, just to punish my kids, because, you know, they had annoyed me.
Mm-hmm.
So I played Peter Gabriel's Shock the Monkey twice in a row, just to punish them, you see. Because you got to be firm with kids.
That's a great song, though.
Well, maybe when you edit this, you can edit in me saying a song that you don't like. Because that would be pretty funny if it were a song that you didn't like.
I'm not saying I go out of my way to hear Shock the Monkey, but it was a pretty decent song.
I did go out of my way this morning. And I'll tell you what, I remember not liking that song, but when I played it for the kids this morning on decent speakers in my car, with the where the bass really comes through.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, that ain't too bad. I'm still going to play it twice in a row.
You're famous about that. I'm famous about, I have a set of CDs. People I used to work with were entertained by this, but I had a set of CDs that I made called Songs from the 80s That Don't Suck.
Okay.
And there was like maybe 20 songs altogether. So I absolutely hate 80s music. But like you said, I think in a lot of ways, some of the music wasn't, it was ahead of its time because the technology to be able to appreciate it wasn't there. But now when you listen back to it, that they can digitally remaster everything, it's really, a lot of it is really good music.
Well, not just the digital remastering, but I was imagining this as I'm driving to work, thinking, yeah, I was driving the kids to school on my way to work, thinking, this sounds really good in this car, which basically I have my like iPhone plugged into my, you know, stock, you know, stereo that came with the car, playing through the stock speakers that came with the car in a loud car, right? And it's sounding good. And I thought, I was imagining back in the day, right? Somebody playing this song on their record player that's plugged into the, you know, the hi-fi system, the best system. Obviously, long hair, slick back, like the guy from Karate Kid 3, or was it 2? 2. 2, right? The guy that ran the dojo.
3 was the girl.
Right. So the rich guy that ran the dojo. Yeah, it was 2. It was 2. You know, the slick back hair with the no socks, of course, and the white pants and everything, and the like sport jacket. He's in his house with all the sleek lines and everything, and he's got his hi-fi system. I was like, those guys enjoyed the music because they had the system that you can play it on. Me and my, you know, $75 stereo that my parents got me for Christmas, you know, it just didn't do it justice, right? Plus, I didn't buy Peter Gabriel albums. I was listening over the radio, right?
Right.
Hey, tell me, you've introduced me to a lot of good music. And I know there are some bands from the 80s that were good, like Love and Rockets. They were kind of 80s, right?
They were 80s. They were the 80s, yes. For me, anyway.
David Bowie, clearly David Bowie.
Okay. Yeah, he
Queen, which I knew about Queen.
Queen had The Game that put them back on the map. Bowie had the Let's Dance album, which put him back up on the map. So yeah, they were still big back then.
So other than ZZ Top, Tom Waits, The Cars, and Love and Rockets, and David Bowie and Queen, what other bands did I miss?
My absolute favorite name for a band just so happened to be in the 80s, around 1980, late 80s, around 1988, when I think their first album came out, and that was The Smithereens, which, if you like Social Distortion, you would probably like The Smithereens. At least their first three albums were so, they were like the Nirvana of their time, minus The Suicide. They were just a really good, loud, rock, solid rock band. Let's see, the Bodines were great. They were also late 80s, though.
Oh, I love the Bodines.
Yeah, the Bodines were slick. I liked them a lot.
I don't really know much about the Bodines, but I do have a good story about them.
All I was going to add was that we just lost Pat D'Annunzio, the lead singer from the Smithereens, I think yesterday.
Back in 1965, she had lived to live in Amsterdam. I was half with a bottle of ice. She was tall and cool and pretty, and she just as black as coal. If she asked me to, I'd Welcome back to the Don't Panic radio show. Thank you, James Beck Jr., superfan James, and Paul Volstor for answering the stealth question of the day. Question was, hey, what good bands did I miss in the 80s? Go. And I'm glad, you know, we've said this before. We have smart listeners on this show. The non-smart answer would have been, well, I don't know which ones you missed. Which ones did you catch? Like, lighten up, Francis. So anyway, SFJ says, the Boomtown Rats, who I've heard of, but I would say, yes, I did miss them because I'm not familiar with their
music. I'll fill you in on the Boomtown Rats.
How do you feel about the Boomtown Rats?
I can't stand them, but Bob Geldof, he was the mastermind behind the, was it Band-Aid? Remember Band-Aid? Remember back in the 80s when everything wasn't AIDS, including AIDS?
AIDS.
And
that's the one thing they missed is AIDS. We are the world. Why didn't they have AIDS Aid? That would have been great.
I forget which one of the... I think maybe it was Band-Aid that he spearheaded. The lead singer, you know, founder or whatever of the Boomtown Rats. But as far as the music goes, I couldn't stand it. But for what they managed to accomplish and all the... I suspect, though, that the millions and millions that they raised all went to cocaine because nothing ever got accomplished. So
Bob Geldof was the lead singer of the Boomtown Rants?
Yes. Sir Bob Geldof. Okay. I believe he's been knighted because of his charity contributions.
Because of his contributions to cocaine.
Yes.
Willie Nelson did Farm Aid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Paul Volstorf says Arcadia. That is truly one I missed. I've not heard of Arcadia.
I'm not familiar with Arcadia.
This song is called So Red the Rose. Or maybe it's the album. I like it.
It is very 80s.
All right, good one, Paul. Paul has another one. And it's beyond me why he thinks I would have missed this. Because I don't think anyone who was, you know, zygotes who were alive in 1989 at 11:59 p.m. Are familiar with this song. Stray Cats, Stray Cat Strut. I mean, who hasn't heard of the Stray Cats? Am I right?
They were a formidable band back in the 80s for sure. I mean, you couldn't get away from them.
So you embarrassed me before the break by bringing up the Smithereens, mm-hmm. and then I made a couple of snide remarks, mm-hmm. and then you informed me that the lead singer just died.
Yes.
So I'd like to, for a moment, accept your apology, but I'm ready to move on.
Okay.
You're forgiven. And I just want to move on, all right? You don't owe me anything, but you are forgiven, all right? Okay. I accept your apology. Now, tell me about the Smithereens. Why are they so awesome?
Because their sound was so... Okay, that Arcadia, all right, that Volstorf recommended, all right? Yeah. That's what... I will say, unless you were like a hair band, like, you know, Bon Jovi or whatever, that's what you sounded like in the 80s, was that. Then the Smithereens come along with this just straight up, in your face, uproarious, loud rock music.
Mm-hmm.
And it resonated with me.
You know what I find interesting, and I think this is applicable now as much as it was in the 80s, bizarrely. I'll bet there were thousands of bands in the 80s who sounded different, who sounded good, who had a great innovative sound. Mm-hmm. But we never heard them. The Smithereens somehow made it through the filter.
Well, the majority of the good bands that made it through the filter that I heard and got hooked on is largely due to WXRT out of Chicago.
93.1, right?
Yes. That station back then, when everybody was playing the carbon copy, same old, they were playing everything else. It was not impossible to sit and listen to a set of music. In fact, this happened one time. They played in one set of music. They played Motorhead and Johnny Cash in the same set of music, and it worked. So they were just that's why I know where most of these bands come from. The other like probably 20% of the bands I know of are because of my friend Adam, who was the guy who wrote 24 Steps from the Halloween episode. If it weren't for him coming from California with all these cool kick-ass bands, I would have no idea. I would have had no idea who these bands were.
Well, if it weren't for you, I'd have no idea what anything is. But
well, there you go.
Back in the day, speaking of XRT, that used to be how you could tell if somebody was cool or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like a secret handshake or a password. You're like, so, what do you listen to? Oh, you know, mostly XRT. You'd be like, all right, come on, we can hang.
That's right.
You know? We can hang. Although one girl I dated, who I still, to this day, I don't think she turned out quite how I would have expected her to turn out. But the idealized version of her that I think about, like, really, really liked her.
I know who you're talking about.
She was like XRT, but mainly WCKG.
Yeah.
105.9 classic rock.
Yeah.
She's the first. That's where I first heard about Ayn Rand, and that's how she pronounced it. Ayn Rand. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who's Ayn Rand? I don't know who Ayn Rand is. And I was like, let me go read that. Oh, this is weird. We were sort of dating, but I didn't know how to date back then. So it turns out I was a horrible boyfriend.
Nobody told you how to, you know, that it's all about attitude and game.
Well, exactly. And my dad probably gave me a lot more advice than I remember, but the one that sticks out is, if you don't make a move and try, you know, if you don't try something with her, she's going to think you're gay.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
That was the knowledge bomb. That was...
Yeah, I mean, he's like, at some point, you got to make a move. Because if you don't, she's just going to be like, well, this guy must be gay. And she's going to move on to the next guy. Thank you for that knowledge.
This bores me. Is anyone up for a game of basketball?
I got a couple other things to bring up. One is, it's Christmas season, and for the first year, my oldest daughter, the 12-year-old going on 35,
yes,
wanted to have a Christmas party, and a lot of things have fallen to their mother, like a lot of the social things, right?
Yeah.
For better or for worse, whether or not I'm supposed to be more involved, I'm not sure. I'm just... you know, dumb dude, right? I'm like the sitcom dad, right? Just, oh, I'm just a dad, or I'm going to trip over this couch. But anyway, this whole Christmas party gets planned and everything. When I first heard about it, I said, okay, that sounds great. You know what we should do? Tell the parents. They don't have to, but if they want to, they can stick around and we'll have a little, you know, adult beverage situation of our own. We'll put the kids down in the rec room, down in the basement. And we'll hang out in the kitchen like everybody always does, and have some cocktails, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sounded like a good idea. So we did.
Yeah.
And this was last Saturday, and I had a freaking blast with the other parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, well, actually, two of the other parents. I would have had fun with the other parents in the room, but we were having so much fun.
You forget to mingle.
We became a little bit intimidating. You know?
Yeah.
We were like the show that everybody else was watching. it was, and we were drinking like it. So everybody comes over, right? And one of the guys I knew pretty well, his name is Ten. His first name is Ten, like the number, which I think is one of the coolest names I've ever heard. Anyway, African-American gentleman. And then this other guy shows up. Well, I know Ten pretty well. He and I have hung out quite a bit. Mm-hmm. He's the guy, I don't know if I ever told you this, he's the guy that said, hey, I'm going to be, he's like, I'm going to be watching, forget the school. It'd be funny if I could remember the schools. Let's just say, I know what it was. He says, hey, you know, Purdue's playing Michigan this weekend, and, you know, I'm not really a fan of either team, but I'm going to be rooting for Purdue because the coach is African-American. He said black.
Mm-hmm.
You ever notice black people don't say African-American?
Yeah, that's a
they
thing.
Say black.
That's a total white guilt thing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So he's like, I'll be rooting for Purdue because, you know, they got the black coach. And I said, oh, man, that's funny. I'm going to be rooting for Michigan for the same reason. And immediately regretted saying it, but he almost fell down. He was laughing so hard. I was like, dude, that came out more racist than I meant for
that's
it.
That's right.
He's like, no, it didn't. It came out exactly as racist as you meant for it. I was like, okay, all right. So that was a while ago. Uh-huh. So that's 10. The other guy's Tim. I think I call him Tim. But he graduated from Rogers High School in Michigan City, Indiana in 1995, which was the last year anybody graduated from Rogers High School in mm-hmm. Michigan City, Indiana. So he and I hit it off. I've met him a couple other times, but we hit it off because, you know, I told him I was from Michigan City. Mm-hmm. He's like, what high school did you go to? I told him. He's like, I went to that high school and stuff. But he had a completely different experience than you or I did, because
he got laid.
That's an understatement. The man, okay. I mean, I didn't know that much pussy could fit in one school, and he got all of it. And he got all. His wife is beautiful, and I'm sure he's faithful to her. But I'm also sure that his experience of high school involved way more vagina than yours and mine. All right. So anyway, he's also black. So I was kind of trying to mingle, right? Mm-hmm. But freaking Poppy, the dog,
yeah,
is barking. And I'm like, she usually does bark when somebody new comes over. She'll mm-hmm. bark at the new person for a bit. And then, you know, they do the whole, like, oh, she probably smells my dog. You know, I do that too. I'm a big mm-hmm. doofus. If I go to somebody's house and the dog is, like, all over me, I'm like, oh, they probably smell my dog. I'm a dog person. Oh, let's all be dog people. Let's all advertise that we're dog people, pet the dog, and then the dog goes and, you know, licks the other dog's asshole, right? Only it kept going, right? She did all the obligatory, you know, sniff and bark at the new people. Mm-hmm. That she kept barking, it kept happening, and then I notice she's only barking at 10 and 10. I'm like,
I think your dog has issues.
I go over to get her. I'm like, Poppy, go away. I'm gonna put you outside, right? And 10 like gets my attention. He goes, Steve. Tim and I have noticed that she's only barking at us. And And we think we know why. And I'm like, oh, dude, all right. My dog might be racist, but I'm not racist.
You have a racist dog.
But I'm about to say something that I think might be racist. But I don't think I'm racist. And Ten's like, Steve, you and I have had a lot of conversations. You're definitely racist. But I do like you. And then Tim, the guy from Michigan City, goes, I like you too. He's like, you're from Michigan City. When I first met you and I heard you're from Michigan City, he's like, I know I'm going to like this guy. And I know what high school he went to. And there were probably more black people there than white people. So I know I'm going to like this guy. I was like, and then we got to talking about junior high. And I was like, all right, I just want to explain, because all of our kids are in junior high. And we got to talking about, like, Ten and I have daughters. Tim has a son. And we were talking about how it's different and how are we preparing our kids for the onslaught of whatever that's going to be coming at them, right? And I said, well, you know, we're pretty lucky. Because if you think about, like, as I think about it, my kids' experience of 7th and 8th grade is going to be so different from mine. He's like, where you go to school?
Yeah.
I said, Krieger. He goes, next to the projects? I was like, yeah, Krieger, next to the projects. He's like, oh, shit. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. He's like, so that's what I'm talking about with my son. He's like, my son doesn't know, and he's talking about his African-American gentleman's son. He's like, my son doesn't know what it's like to see a fight in the hallway every day at school. And I said, I went to Krieger. I was in a fight in the hallway every day at school.
I was in a couple of them myself.
It's like, it wasn't a matter of, hey, you know, mind your own business and nobody will mess with you. No, we're not talking about bees. We're talking about Krieger. you can mind your own business and trouble will find you, right? And he's like, I know, I heard, he went to Barker. And he's like, I know, I heard all the stories and I know about them projects. But we couldn't think of the name of the projects. What was the name of those projects next to Krieger?
We just called them the projects.
Right? And people would talk about the projects and they'd be talking about some other projects in the city. And I'd be like, over by Krieger? They'd be like, no, the other projects. I'm like, there's other projects?
No, and
it's like Kleenex.
And
right?
What's funny, Kleenex, Xerox, Coke. Not cocaine. The funny thing too about Krieger is, as bad as it was for us, you know, 35 years ago, it's worse now.
Jesus.
It has actually gotten worse.
How could it be worse?
It has gotten so bad that now they have to wear the kids there it's a public school. They have to wear uniforms.
They're wearing body armor.
It's just bad. I mean, it's my therapist has dealt with a lot of kids, and one day I was talking to her and I brought up that, you know, I had gone to Krieger Junior High, and she's like, ooh. So I mean, for a minute she lost her professional comportment. It was just like, ooh, I'm like, yeah.
The minute I told this guy I went to Krieger, he's like, oh. He's like, I knew you were from Michigan City. I didn't know you were from Michigan City. Right? He's like, there was the projects in Michigan City, and then there was those projects, you know? He's like, ugh. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I did my best. We drank. See this bottle right here? This bottle of bourbon, it was full. Mm-hmm. I broke the seal on it, and we got it down to like here, the three of us. I've done this tonight, but like the three of us got it. And by the end of the night, we're like, ooh, well, there you go. Hope your wives are driving. Well, the one guy's wife is a judge.
Or if you're from Michigan City, let the kids drive home.
Yeah, right.
I'm barbed wire.
Something I haven't done in a while, a naltrexone update. It's been a few weeks.
Following on the coattails of your from your bourbon story.
My drunken debauchery. It's fairly appropriate because one thing about naltrexone that I haven't mentioned, if you don't take it, it doesn't work. And I don't know why, but I haven't taken it in the last few weeks. I have no idea why.
It's good to know it's non-habit forming then. I mean, clearly.
Well, that's true. Because I don't sit around going, oh, I need my naltrexone. But remember the first few weeks I was like, oh, this is a miracle drug. I don't want to drink anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, and I think I said back then, I was like, look, it's the first week.
Yeah.
It's the first couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. You cannot listen to what I'm saying
right.
in the first couple of weeks because it's probably not the naltrexone not drinking. It's probably the, oh, Steve's decided to drink a little less mentality not drinking. So the real test will be, you know, after the holidays.
Yeah.
You know, everybody goes back to the gym. Everybody goes to the gym after the holidays. I'm going to go back to the naltrexone after the holidays. And we'll see how that goes. And I'm not making any excuses. And this is the part where, you know, the listeners start calling 911 on me. But I've had a number of, like shortly after I started the naltrexone,
mm-hmm.
several things happened in my life that brought on additional stress,
mm-hmm.
right? So I've always had this like low grade, not always. So, all right, get ready. The history of Steve's mental illness. So the depression started, probably 20 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe 25. Finally got medicated like 15, 20 years ago with the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
Prozac. Later on, I switched to Wellbutrin, which was great. And Wellbutrin was great because it didn't have the side effects of Prozac.
What side effects were you having on Prozac? You don't have to go into it if you don't want to.
No, I will. No, I'm being honest, man. If this freaking podcast is going to take off, it'll be because you and I are honest and real with the listeners. So it was, I had like zero libido, no sex drive whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that. I've heard that happens.
Yeah. Like nothing, right? So actually, I tried to wean myself off of it. And I did some natural things like, I don't remember the name of the thing, but there's like this precursor to serotonin that like you take it and it's supposed to make more serotonin.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's bullshit and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And I got like really depressed and I finally went in to a psychiatrist and she's like, oh yeah, you can't stop on your own. Once you're on the shit, you cannot stop on your own because
right.
you'll get worse than
right.
before you ever started. And she's like, but I hear you on the side effects. Here's your, you know, take this Wellbutrin. The Wellbutrin was great. I wasn't depressed. But, you know, I went back. I go see her every once in a while. I go to see her and I'm like, I'm not depressed, but I'm freaking worried about shit all the time. Like,
yeah.
Even though I have a great family, and she's like, oh, that's anxiety. Like, mm-hmm. Well, when I read about anxiety, it's like people like crying in the bathroom, right? She's like, well, no, you've got like this low grade, you know, persistent anxiety. Here's Zoloft, because I hear you on the Prozac, but sometimes people do Zoloft and it's not as bad. And sure enough, she gives me the Zoloft. It's not as bad. So now I got the Zoloft going. I got the Wellbutrin going. Now I'm on drugs, right? That's about 10 years ago. So I thought I knew what anxiety was. I thought I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah.
The last time I saw my psychiatrist, like I told you, I think on the show,
yeah,
like I was explaining to him how everything's great. I'm not depressed. I'm not anxious. Bud, I think I do drink a little too much sometimes, so let's do something. He's like, let's do the naltrexone. And then within a week of that, we had our depositions for the lawsuit that we're under, which was way more stressful than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I know you were stressing out about that pretty bad.
Right. Yeah. I thought I was getting a cold. And then we leave, and within an hour, I'm fine. And I'm like, wait a minute. Where's that cold I was getting? And then the next day we go in, same thing happens, right? So then I sent an email to my doc, and I'm like, I explained to him what happened, and I said, this isn't the last time. We're gonna have to do this again. So he prescribes another drug. And I'm like, ugh. Just keep prescribing the drugs, I guess.
That's what a psychiatrist does.
Right?
Have you thought about, like, getting an actual therapist?
Yes, I have. So he prescribes that. Mm-hmm. And then right around the same time, and I haven't mentioned this on the show. I don't want to make it a topic on the show, but I want to mention it because it's part of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, really close, good friend of mine, like, went into crisis mode, you know, Iraq veteran, PTSD, depression, and all this stuff. So he and I talked on the phone a lot, and
right,
you know, I didn't know what to do. Who knows? Nobody knows what to do, right? So, but that triggered more anxiety because I was worried about him, and
yeah,
I started getting this thing where I thought I had like a lung infection. You know, like sometimes you, like if you have a like bronchitis or something, you like, you try to take a breath, but you can't quite get enough breath. You know, you like try to take a deep breath. You can't, you want to yawn or you want to take a, I couldn't like get enough breath. And that went on for like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I coming down with? And I wasn't coming down with anything. And then Mark, you know, took his own life, and I went out for that funeral and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, like, I feel like I'm having a, like, angina, as Trump would say, angina. It's like when you read about the symptoms of angina, which is basically like a sort of like a heart attack.
Yes.
It's like tightness in the chest, numbness in like an arm, your back hurts, your neck hurts, and all this stuff. I'm having these symptoms, and I'm like, am I having a heart attack? And I'm like, wait a minute. I don't think I'm having a heart. I think I'm having like real, honest to goodness anxiety.
Yeah, that's you just described anxiety.
Like, not like I'm worried something bad might happen. Yeah. That is like a super low grade anxiety. Yeah. But now I'm like having physical symptoms. Like, am I having a heart attack? And that's actual honest to goodness. Like, dude, do you even anxiety? Yeah, man, I do anxiety. and so now I'm at the point, I sent a note to, it's weird, man, because when Mark was having his trouble, a group of people, you know, initiated by his ex-wife and his current girlfriend, they sent an email out to, you know, a group of us who they know are his close friends. And, you know, we all have been in touch, like, how do we help Mark? And now, you know, once he ended it, now we're all like, how do we help each other? Right.
Yeah.
So tonight I did something I never, ever do. And I sent them a note that was only about me. And I said, here are my symptoms. Here's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I know you guys all have experience with this stuff. Sorry to do this. And I was like apologetic. And like who does that? Like, who's apologetic about like asking for help? Right.
Huh.
But anyway, so I did that, and the overwhelming response is, you're right to be skeptical of the pharmaceutical solution. You need to find a therapist.
Yes. and just like a drug, it is not one size fits all. You might have to go through two or three of them before you find the one that actually understands your problem and can help you with it. But it's, I highly recommend it.
That's the part of the whole situation that, that one thing about the, you have to go through several and you have to, you know, mm-hmm. It won't be the first one. It might not be the second one. You have to keep trying all that. For me mm-hmm. personally, that has been the one biggest obstacle to finding a good therapist. Because for some reason, I have no idea why, I have this thing where I'm like, there ought to be a way to find out, you know, to find the person without having to go through, you know, a half a dozen different people. But I hear you. And I think you're right. I just have to realize it's a process and not a do a little research on the internet and I'll find the right person. You know, I got to go through a few anyway. So that's the naltrexone update.
Do we have any late entries? And then we should probably call it a show.
Oh, here's the late entry. Constance Wilhair Vincent says Echo and the Bunnymen.
Oh, yeah. I was just listening to them before we started the show.
What's their big... I know them. What's their big claim to fame?
Killing Moon?
No, what's the one that everybody knows?
Type in Echo of the Bunnymen and see what pops up.
Oh, the Killing Moon.
Yeah.
Look at you, all knowledgeable and everything.
Yeah.
There's some other song by them that I don't know.
The other really good band from the 80s was Joy Division.
Yes. Another band.
That... And unfortunately, Ian Curtis had so many problems that he took his own life. But when that song popped up on, I think it's episode 3 or 4 of Stranger Things season 1, when Atmosphere starts playing, I'm like, I was hooked at that point on. Everybody knows Love Will Tear Us Apart by Joy Division, but so many. How was it? Officer Nick was telling me one time about how his nephews were into screamo bands. Mm. And he's like, that's great. You know, that's what you're into. But if you ever want to listen to music that will make you want to basically, you know, kill yourself, you know, you have to listen to Joy Division. And they started in the 70s, but they got popular kind of in the 80s. And no, that's another band that really, I owe that one to Adam. That's a callback from earlier because he was the one that introduced me to Joy Division.
So we have a number of listeners who give us the feedback like frequently that the music on this show mm-hmm. is one of the things that they thoroughly enjoy and keep coming back for. So I will commit to you here and now that I will make sure I make a list of all these bands that we've talked about tonight and make sure that it's on the, when we post this episode. So the listeners can go make their own playlist on iTunes, or, you know, we might make a YouTube playlist.
We already have one. If you go on our YouTube channel and you click on the Intermezzo playlist, you will hear the music from at least the past 4 or 5 episodes. I've started putting that up there.
That's a great idea, dude. It it may get us sued, but that's all right. I mean, you know.
There's no such thing as negative press.
All right. I think that's the quote to end on. Want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks for telling your friends about us. We've gotten some great feedback lately. People love SFJ on the show. People love Andy Wright, A. William Wright, on the show. maybe we'll have some more guests soon. If you want to be a guest on the show, you know what? All you got to do, let us know. We'd love to have you on. Maybe we'll reach out to a few of you and see if you want to join us. We love having you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, also, we love your feedback. You know what we love even more than your feedback? We love it when you tell a friend. There's nothing that tells us more that you love us than when you tell a friend about the show.
Mm-hmm. You know.
And so, for SFJ, for Paul Volstorff, for my brother Mike, for my wife Constance, for Adam, for Officer Nick, for everyone else who has contributed to this show, and for Paul Schultz. I'm Steve Vinson, and nothing you just heard was true.